The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, our great friends at both dealerships. At Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, General Manager Brian Danahy tells us the 2019s have arrived, so the 2018s got to go. It's your last call to save at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa with the season's best deals. Lease 2018 Escalades, just $859 a month. Hurry to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher, but they're always there at edmorescadillactampa.com. So many offers at the website, and as well as you see at joebucksfan.com and at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, just east of 75 on Causeway Boulevard. The 2019 XT4 is now in stock and ready for immediate delivery. 39.5-inch, best-in-class rear leg room. So many options. You got to check it out at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. And, of course, the season's best sales event continues there. I'm looking at their website now. A new 2019 Cadillac CTS lease, $419 per month. See the dealer for all the details. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, proud presenters of all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com, and such tremendous supporters of our Tampa Bay community in all of their charitable endeavors. Get to edmorescadillactampa.com, edmorescadillacbrandon.com. Here's Ira. Happy Thursday, happy Thanksgiving on the Ira Kaufman Podcast, starring the great sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman, Tampa Bay's only pro football Hall of Fame voter. And Ira Kaufman is the man who votes representing Tampa Bay. And I am Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee DeKemper is here. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. How are you, Ira?
I was feeling very chipper. I was getting in a holiday mood, Lee, till about 10 minutes ago when Mr. Isbitz informed me I've dropped out of the top 50. I'm pissed off about it. I'm not very happy about it, Lee. But you know what? I've been bounced before, and I've come back. Just like the 2018 Buccaneers, we will be back, Lee.
All right, Ira. Well, for folks joining us for the first time, Ira's podcast is typically in the Google Play national charts, all genres, top 50. But you snuck out this week, Ira.
It must have been a glitch. Is this some kind of technological glitch?
I don't know, Sage. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe it's the fact the Bucks have lost.
It's not helping that they're 3-7.
They've lost 7 out of 8, Ira. Not everybody wants to listen to you after that.
What, only maybe, what, the sixth time in 2 years it's not been in the top 50?
It's in the, I think it's like 60 weeks, and you've been out for like 5 weeks. So
what are we thankful for, Steve? What are we thankful we'll get for back, in this holiday season?
Listeners.
We're thankful for lots, Ira. You know what? I guess before we get rolling here, we're live at One Buck Palace, and the podcast also, of course, is available at iTunes and Podbean and right here on joebucksfan.com. On Thanksgiving Day, your in-depth game preview and just discussion of all things Bucks with Derek Brooks is on joebucksfan.com and at the Identity Tampa Bay. And, of course, the Q&A episode already popped, so you can catch up there while you mow down your turkey and drink all kinds of alcohol and cranberry juice, whatever it is you drink.
Sunday I'll be on Game Day Tampa Bay. You know, the report.
Come on, Ira, you don't know the name of your show?
Tailgate Sunday, my friend. Tailgate Sunday.
There you go, 10:30.
10:30 on Sunday.
And Ira will be live at the stadium, 3 straight home games in a row, so you get to see the Sage live on television. It's a lot of fun.
And I went 4-1 on my picks over there. I've bounced back after a miserable 0-5 week.
Of course, we're thankful for lots. I was going to ask you, Ira, going back to 1940s or whatever, 1950s Brooklyn, what is Thanksgiving like for young Ira, 7 years old? What is young Ira doing on the streets of Brooklyn?
Well, I'm probably bringing pizza home. Yeah, you know, me and my brother, Chinese, pizza, little deli. It all revolved around food, and nothing's changed 40 years later. Steve, it's all about food.
40.
By the way, we had a nice spread out here at One Buck. Of course, I stopped and brought my lunch in at PDQ on my way in, and then I realized that there's a hell of a spread here. So the PDQ salad's going home. But Thanksgiving was no big deal in my house, and neither was Christmas. Sorry to disappoint some of
our listeners. One holiday at a time, Ira. Thanksgiving, Brooklyn, 1959. What's going on?
Well, you expect my mother to cook a turkey? First of all, the stove was so small, you can't even get a... You know, a pastrami sandwich in the oven. Come on now. Very little holiday respect in my household. We had a bottle of Manischewitz. It was under the sink where it remained for 11 years.
Under the sink right next
under
to the bleach.
Under the sink. You know, and then I meet my wife, and then, you know, they're all bourbon drinkers and, you know, Jim Beam everywhere. It was a total culture
your,
shock.
Your wife is a Jim Beam drinker.
Total. Well, let's not go carried away over there, really.
Well, wait a minute here. Let's back up. Yeah, she comes from a family of bourbon drinkers. Bourbon,
you know, a bunch of bourbon drinkers. You wouldn't catch bourbon dead in my household.
Could be Jack Daniels, huh?
Could be Jack Daniels.
Okay. Could be Jack Daniels.
So we're heading over to her brother's house on Thanksgiving, and we're bringing a big bottle of bourbon. Good bourbon.
Oh, there you go.
Not the cheap stuff.
Yeah, now, growing up, Thanksgiving, I know you just said you're not a real big festive thing.
Maybe we put a little mushroom on the pizza. That's
but did you watch the...
I'm giving you guys pearls over there. Pearls.
On your 19-inch black and white, yes. Zenith.
With
rabbit ears.
Yeah, the rabbit ears. Yeah. Barry, can you stand a little bit over more in the corner?
Yeah.
It's better reception.
I know those days,
and
too.
You know those.
Briggs Stadium, Detroit, snow on the ground. Watching the Lions?
Oh, there's no question about it. Snow on the ground and snow on the set because they got a lousy reception.
And for those people who don't know what snow on the set is, it's static.
And by the way, it was a black and white, too. Black and white, no question about it.
As the youngest of three kids, Ira, you know how many times I stood there holding the damn antenna? How many hours I stood there holding that thing?
Coat hangers.
Look, since you guys are telling family stories, I'm going to tell my all-time favorite. My brother and I.
Barry.
Small apartment. In Brooklyn, on 43rd Street,
Barry?
Park, Barry. Yeah, see, now you've been listening to Mad Dog. We split the same bedroom, and it was like an 8x10 bedroom, small. Two beds in there, and my brother tells me, I'm 5 years old. He's nine, you know, big Barry, big brother. And he tells me, Ira, I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you. You can have the window.
Uh-oh.
In the winter, right in front of the window.
Yeah.
He goes, I'll take it in the summer. What the hell do I know? I'm 5 years old. I'm happy for anything the guy gives me, a pastrami sandwich, anything. And I froze my ass off for 5 months of the year, and I sweated my butt off for the other 6 months of the year. Oh, Barry, you're supposed to take care of your kid brother. I'm going to tell him that when I talk to him. You know, I talk to the guy every 6 months, and I'm going to tell him.
And the best part is that Barry changed his name. And we've been down that road before. Maybe we'll get to that another day.
Yeah, that's right. He changed his last
name. Mad Dog needles you by saying he lives at the old farts in Los Angeles.
La Quinta. Which is a half an hour from Palm Springs.
But not to be confused, La Quinta Inn.
Totally different. There's a lot of money out there. A lot of money.
Where your brother lives? With the old farts?
There's probably Republican country out there, I guarantee it.
The Republicans in California, it's starting to get to be a rare bird.
What else you got, Stevie?
All right, Sage, we haven't even gotten started. Of course, your podcast, as we heard the opening from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.
I can only imagine the deals that Ed Morse is offering at Thanksgiving.
And Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, we love them, and great offers. And, of course, December is right around the corner, and those end-of-the-year opportunities, wow, they're always mind-blowing. So get to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Ira.
And Steve, with Christmas coming up, don't forget your favorite columnist. You know, keep me in mind, Steve. I know you will.
Santa.
Look, we're at $1. Jameis Winston addressed the media today as the starting quarterback of this football team again. And it was a very different kind of Jameis, Ira. I want your impressions. Jameis was not smiley. He was not really focused on the future. He was sort of not answering questions the way he usually does. He was sort of answering questions, Ira, in a
monotone,
more of a pensive, monotone, philosophical, not like a guy who's enjoying his job. What did you think?
Lee, I think I'd use two words, low wattage. You don't associate that with Winston. One thing we've been saying since he ever got to Tampa. Passion. Boy, does he love to play football. Compete. And today, subdued.
Yeah.
Low wattage. Oh, my phone. That could be Warren.
Could that be 99?
That could be Warren Sapp.
All right, Ira, you just have to disturb our podcast because you got a phone call from Warren Sapp.
That's not a bad way to interrupt, baby. Not a bad way.
We'll get to that a little bit. You can share a couple of nuggets there. If anybody heard Ira's phone ring, I'll try to enhance that in the audio so you know it's real.
Well, I'll do a teaser. Can I do a teaser?
Yeah, of course you can.
All right. I brought up Vita Vea's name to Sapp, and I said that when I talked to Brooks earlier this week about Vita Vea, he used the word Velcro.
So he listens to Beckles, too?
Velcro. Can't get off the blocks. Sapp started laughing and goes, I call him OG Vita Vea. And I said, what does that mean? On the ground, Vita Vea. On the ground, 60% of the time. So that's a little bit of a teaser there, baby. We're not trying to pick on the 12th pick in the draft. He's a rookie.
Here's this, Ira, on that very subject. there was a guy on Twitter, and he's Twittering at Steve and I, Joe Buck's fan account. And he's, oh, you know, Vita, he's only had this amount of sacks in college. And I said, well, I'm not an NFL scout. I said, if NFL scouts only used, or NFL teams only use stats as the basis of their analysis, they wouldn't need any scouting departments. They'd just pull up Walter Football. That's number one. Number two, and I think it was the same guy early this morning, you know, he was going off on Vita Vea and how a guy with the Redskins, a rookie, is doing better. And I said, look, he may turn out to be something. He may not turn out to be something. I'm going to give the guy a huge mulligan if a rookie misses all of training camp and all of preseason. I said, that's beyond harsh. In fact, it's unfair to judge a rookie when he had no preseason, no training camp.
And, Steve, by extension, you don't rank a draft class in the middle of the first season. You don't do it. Mm-hmm. You give them 2 or 3 years. The one thing I'm disappointed, Steve, tell me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
On Vita Vea, Steve, I thought he'd be more stout at the point of attack. More stout. Hold his ground. Instead, I see him getting pushed around a little bit. That surprises me.
You know, I saw that earlier. The first couple games he played, specifically at Chicago, I was up in Chicago. They tried to run on him once, and it blew up in their face, the Bears, that is. They didn't run on him again the rest of the game. And I saw him getting some penetration, not to go after the pass rusher, of course, but he was bull rushing. He was bull rushing people. You know, he was pushing the linebacker. As far as run defense, I thought he was doing fine, especially for his first game. Maybe other teams have a book out on him already. I don't know.
To me, he should definitely be on the goal line defense, Steve. He's got to be on the goal line defense.
He wasn't on the goal line defense against Cleveland, and he's struggled, and Dirk Cutter threw him under the bus, and all the ex-players are saying he can't get off a block. I don't think it's unfair to judge the guy just on what we've seen, which is that he's having a bad rookie year. This is a number 12 overall pick. Now, yes, it's totally unfair to call him a bust. It's unfair to grade the draft class yet, but we got to look at what we're looking at.
It's up to the coaching staff to develop him, Steve.
I know, and he's supposed to have a good coach. He's supposed to have an all-pro next to him. He's got JPP. All the guys really seem to like Vea. You know, it's just very strange that he hasn't come on. So I'm looking for him to improve in these next six games.
What I'm about ready to say is probably sacrilege.
It won't be the first time on this podcast,
no.
Kemper.
Didn't Sapp have a pretty rotten year as a rookie? Wasn't he pulled off
fairly nondescript year, yes.
Wasn't he also pulled off the field on passing situations, of all people?
Might have been. Now, that was before Monty Kiffin came aboard and realized what he had in 99 and built the defense around him, Brooks, and Lynch, which is what a good coach does.
Yeah. Thank you. He develops talent. Exactly. Gets the most out of his talent. Maybe not develops, gets the most out. But please don't misunderstand. I'm not comparing Vita to Sapp. I'm saying 7 games in, and that's what Vea is, 7 games in, because he missed early. 7 games into his rookie year, it would have been grossly unfair to label Sapp a bust. So I'm like, let's tap the brakes. Am I absolving him? No. Am I giving him a mulligan? Sure. But if he's doing the same crap a year from now, if he has a healthy offseason, if he has a healthy training camp and preseason, then yes, then I think we can start throwing pot shots at him.
Speaking of 99, guys, I don't know if you watched the Monday night game throughout like I did. But at one point, Aaron Donald was such a game wrecker, and has been since he got in this damn league. Booger, who knows better than anybody, said, well, I played with one of the all-time greats in Warren Sapp. And, I mean, he could barely finish the sentence because I think Booger was about to say, this guy might be better. I didn't think I was going to say that, 7 years after Sapp retired or 8 years after Sapp retired. This guy's a monster.
Oh.
This guy's a damn I hear that he's double teamed 75% of the time.
Yeah, I've read that.
Never complains about it.
And he still produces.
What a player.
You know, in retrospect, that Monday night game from Donald, you know what that sort of reminds me of? And of course it was a Bucks loss, but that playoff game when they played at Green Bay against Favre, Sapp was in Favre's face the whole day.
One of the greatest games Sapp ever had. Mm-hmm. One of the greatest games he's ever had.
Just for kicks, I pulled up the numbers. Sapp, his rookie year, started half the games, so he was on the bench half the year. He had a pick six, forced fumble, 3 sacks, and 17 solo tackles and 10 assists. Right now, Vea is on an incredible pace of 2 solo tackles and 1 or 2 assists, I believe. So, production-wise,
well, Lee's not mentioning Vea and Sapp.
I just was curious looking it up. I know Sapp's first year was not special. Nobody was calling Warren Sapp a Hall of Famer after
just
his
like
first
Rondé
year.
Barber's rookie year was yeah. not special.
Actually,
in
his
any
job
way.
Was bad, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was bad.
So hopefully Vea can come on. You know, you wonder if he knows all the stuff swirling around about him and how he can't get off a darn block. But you know, he didn't have a lot ton of snaps in the last game. I think he was down to like 40%.
Speaking of Buck defensive linemen, past and present, a past member, I believe, got screwed on Tuesday night. His name is Simeon Rice. He wore 97. He was a hell of a Buck. He elevated a very good defense to a great one.
Yes.
I think he averaged like 12 sacks a year as a Buck and was productive in Arizona before he got here. And he did not make the list of 25 semifinalists. He's already been cut. And it surprised me because last year he made the list. And then all of a sudden he disappears. Where is the love? Where is the respect for that Buck defense? I'm sorry. I have a problem with that. My fellow voters, I think they dropped the ball.
Could it be they're saying, you know, you already got two Hall of Famers in there. They've only won one ring. Isn't that about right? And I
understand, Lee.
Yeah, I'm not.
But
I'm not
that, that was a dominant defense over a long period of time. I don't think you can get around that.
That's true.
It's not the 85 Bears, the 2000 Ravens. This is a 7-year stretch. That's an eternity.
Well, I think part of that, part of the angst, and it goes to what Lee said, is that Rice was great before he got to Tampa. So he had, what, 4, 5, 6 years in Arizona? So, I mean, his resume goes to there as well. Now, they weren't a great football team. But
it refutes that argument, yeah.
It takes a little bit out of that argument. But I'm sure there's some of that out there, that sentiment of, well, how many bucks are we going to put in and that kind of thing.
And he was also the master of the strip sack. He was great at it.
Yeah.
He was great at it off that blind side.
Well, I don't know if this is a compliment or not to Ira, but I read Mike Tanner of Bleacher Report. I know Mike. Mike's a great guy. And if you don't follow him, if you're a football fan, you don't follow Mike. He's both informative and entertaining. Guys,
Tanier.
Yeah, Tanier. He ought to be a comedy writer. He's excellent. He's almost like Ira. He's quick with it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
But anyway, Mike. But he went.
He grew up with me in Brooklyn. I'm his mentor.
I didn't know he went to Brooklyn. I thought he's a Philly guy.
Did he have a window?
He also shared that bedroom with me and my brother. That's a whole other story.
But he did, and this is a nice piece of trivia. He did. He's a retired math teacher. He retired, I guess, put 20, 25 years in as a teacher, high school teacher, and then now he's a writer. You know, his second life, the second career. His claim to fame was in one of his algebra classes, he had a young man by the name of Joe Flacco.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, at any rate,
by the way, I got a 98 on the math regent, so just wanted to tell you that.
So, Mike was going on, I don't know if tirade's the right word, but he was on a tangent. Let's put that, that's negative. He was twittering a bunch of Hall of Fame stuff, so positive things. And one of the things he said about Lynch and Rondé Barber, he said the Buccaneers faction will get Lynch in before Barber. And I looked at Ira and said, Ira, you're a faction.
Well, maybe he's talking about the Glazers and Scott Smith. I don't know who he's talking about.
Well, look, you know, I put it firmly on the Glazers, Simeon Rice being a number 25 semifinalist. They're not committed to getting him in. They're not committed to Rondé. They're not committed to Lynch. Weak effort, weak sauce. It's political. Get in the politics, Team Glazer. You guys have donated to political campaigns. You can donate to the campaigns of your great
it's
Buccaneers.
It's dirty, but you got to get in there.
You got to check the Ari Fleischer if you don't want to get your hands dirty.
That's the bottom line, Sage. Did you see the caption I threw up on the site?
Tremendous with sending me off on a 3-week road trip. Outstanding. I never saw a guy so anxious to spend the Glazers' money, Lee. It's fantastic.
Come on, a few trips.
He eats enough on Sunday games that the Glazers are coughing
up
money.
There's one voter who lives in Buenos Aires. I think I need to track it.
So, but I think just looking at a couple of the names, Ira, we don't have to go too deep on this because there's so much time to talk about the Hall. But I don't know how Rondé Barber's going to get in past Champ Bailey. You know, how he's going to get in. Ty Law is going to be tough with that whole contingent there.
Yes, yes.
It's tough sledding
for
Reed.
Barber. And Ed Reed's ahead of Lynch. He's going to go flying
Ed
right
Reed's
past
ahead of Lynch.
Palomalo next year, right?
Palomalo next year.
Atwater keeps hanging around. And
he
isn't
does.
There
he
another
hangs
safety?
Around. Darren Woodson, I believe, yeah. And won Super Bowls with the Cowboys, you know, and they had a very good defense.
And Jerry Jones isn't scared to pull a Bullseye, is he?
That's right. You're right about that, Lee. Jerry Jones will do what it takes.
Including getting guys drunk.
I'm going to have a meeting.
On the Cowboys bus.
I'm going to have a meeting with Buck personnel maybe next week and try to come up with some kind of a strategy.
See, oh, here's a strategy for you. You think they'll do a Buccaneers bus like Jerry Jones does? He parks the bus at the combine. And he gets all these guys liquored up.
That's not bad, baby.
Here's
not
the
bad.
Strategy.
My wife says well, I should bring a hologram of Lynch into the room. A hologram.
That's pretty good. But you heard the story about how. You heard the story about how Steve tried to bum rush and get on the Cowboys bus outside of St. Elmo's?
Oh, that's outstanding.
It was great. Who was the guys on Fox TV? Used to be a referee coordinator.
Blandino?
Mike Blandino. Pereira. Blandino was on the bus. And
did,
so was
did,
Jake
did a bouncer
Glazer.
Stop you from getting on, Steve? Did he put his arm up and say, where are you going,
it
sir?
It didn't work. It was very cold. It was very late. And we're going to leave it at that.
All right.
Anyway,
I feel bad for Simeon. I do. I just feel bad. He's 20th on the all-time sack list. Just let him. Let me make the case for him. Don't keep him out. Richard Seymour is the only D-lineman on it. Now, look, Seymour was a heck of a player.
Yeah.
He was a tackle. He's not going to get as many sacks as Julius Peppers and Rice mm-hmm. and Jared Allen. Not going to happen. I understand that. 6 Pro Bowls for Seymour. And, you know, those early New England Super Bowl teams in the early 2000s.
Anchor on that
they,
line.
They were mostly defensive teams.
Yes.
Ty Law, Prusky, mm-hmm. McGinnis.
Mm-hmm.
Seymour was right in the middle of that. And they had Rodney Harrison, I think.
As a safety, yeah.
I mean, they had. They
By
had
the way, you mentioned his name. When is Jared Allen going to be eligible?
Jared Allen's got a very strong case to make.
Yes,
very,
he does.
Very strong.
When's
I would say another 2 years. 2 years, for Jared Allen.
Yeah, that's there's another roadblock.
Got to be retired for 5 years. Got to be retired.
And
for 5 years.
That's a roadblock for Simeon.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be working on these guys, Ira. You know, Team Glazer should be sending you to the final game in Dallas. You should be at every playoff game where all the national voters are hovering around.
And you've been talking about Rondé working the room when he does the Fox.
Rondé.
I think Rondé's doing Sunday's game. Rondé is doing Sunday's game.
Rondé goes to what? 14 cities a year between preseason games and go up to each voter and say, hey, man, how are you?
Well, you know what the best publicity Rondé can do? And I don't know if he wants to do it or not. And I bet if he wanted to, he could. Not publicity, but exposure helps you out. And right now he's only out there partially on telecast. You know, they don't see his face. They hear his voice. If he worked for ESPN or if he worked for the NFL Network and was like a panelist – running back Tomlinson, one reason he got in the Hall of Fame, you can't tell me it didn't help, was when he was an NFL analyst. Every week he was on TV.
Yes,
every
yes.
week. Sports writers watch that.
Terrell Davis. Didn't hurt him being out there every week.
Sure. Yeah, he was on there on NFL Network.
And Rondé, what I'm talking about, though, is even, I agree with what Lee's saying, is
exposure.
Rondé's in, if he's doing a game in Charlotte. Okay, so you're there 4 hours early anyway.
Find out who the Hall of Fame voter is.
A couple hours before,
Darren
you go
Gant.
Talk to Darren Gant. Hey, how are you? Oh, you work for Pro Football Talk now. Yeah,
you go to Atlanta, you got Orlando Ledbetter.
Yeah, you work the room for
Darryl.
5 minutes. It makes a difference for these guys. All right, Sage, look, back to Jameis, because we got off tangent here with Barnes Sapp calling.
Subdued, I said low wattage. That's not Jameis Winston, Steve. It's not Steve. It's just not him.
Does any of this matter, Ira?
I hope he hasn't lost confidence in himself. I think that would be disastrous for Winston, because I think it's been a big part of his success over the years. He knew how good he was. Doubts start to creep in, Lee. They creep in when you're healthy and Fitzpatrick's not playing particularly well and your coach says, I'm going with Fitzpatrick. That's a problem. That's a problem. It works on you.
You know,
it erodes your self-confidence a little. Hey, my coach doesn't have confidence in me. I think it's almost like Cutter didn't have any choice but to go back to Winston this week.
Oh, he absolutely had no choice.
I think it's at least a week too late. We'll see. I expect Winston to play well against the Niners. We'll do our picks later in the podcast. Steve, I thought one of the interesting things was he didn't shy away from saying the Bengals game was a disaster.
No.
He played really badly, and he didn't argue that point. Thank God, because you can't.
Even admitted he made mistakes in the Browns game.
But he thought he played darn well against the Browns and the Falcons, and you know what? I think he's right, for the most part, especially Atlanta. I thought he played very well.
They didn't lose because of him.
I didn't like the fact that he put his passion in his back pocket, at least today at the podium. That's kind of the first time almost we've ever seen it, maybe his first time back after the suspension or when he talked about the suspension. But this isn't a suspension.
Yeah.
You're healthy, and you're good to go, and your coach didn't pick you last week. That's still on his mind.
I've got a Giants analogy for you. Giants is in baseball. You're a Giants fan. The only other time he was similar to this is his first press conference of training camp, which was his first press conference after the suspension came down. He was very humble. He it wasn't quite that dour. He had a dour personality, understandably so. But this one, I'll use this word. Jameis at a podium, generally, would the word buoyant come?
He exudes confidence as buoyant.
Yeah, very much so. Not today, which was very interesting. Here's my Giants analogy. You're talking about maybe he's losing confidence, being yanked, and there's a story about Cutter I'm going to say in a second here. But my dad always used to tell me a story. I hope I have the specifics right with Leo DeRocher. But when Willie Mays first came up, was DeRocher his manager?
I think that's right.
And Willie Mays was
horrible. He might have went 0 for 20.
Yeah, my dad said he was terrible. And DeRocher sat him down and he said, look, don't you worry about getting set
down.
You're
my center fielder.
Bingo. And after that, kaboom, he went.
Absolutely right.
So someone with the Bucks, whether it be a new coach, whether it be Glazers, whether it be whomever the general manager will be, needs to sit him down like, you're my man.
Steve, what'd you think of his answer when somebody asked Jameis, do you think that the powers that be in this organization still have confidence in you? And he looked the person straight in the eye and said, and didn't hesitate, and said, well, I have confidence in this football team. He didn't address the other part of it.
No.
Steve, did you think that was telling?
Well, he just overall seemed a little bit rattled. You know, usually Jameis is a little tighter on those types of questions, just keeping it all positive and all that stuff. And look, Jameis knows that whether they should have or shouldn't have, he knows that Team Glazer calls the shots if they want to, and could have said, hey, you know, we're not benching the franchise quarterback. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ira, to steal your phrase. I'm sure I've heard Joel Glazer say Jameis is the face of the franchise.
I believe face you're right.
Of the franchise.
I think he said it more than once.
Correct. So, you know, Jameis has heard everybody in this building call him the face of the franchise, and then he's sitting on his ass after Ryan Fitzpatrick scores 3 points. You know, I think he's not necessarily so excited about everyone's confidence in him.
Lee, how much of Winston's future with this organization in terms of 2019 depends on how he plays in the next 6 games? Or do you think decisions have already been made at the top levels about whether to keep him or not?
Well, that's interesting.
That's a good question.
That's a very good question. Now, there's some national pundits already that have stated if the Bucks were going to wave goodbye to Jameis, he'd be the number one free agent. The number one free agent. Not a linebacker.
Regardless Jameis. Of position.
Yes, number one free agent. Well, that says something. It says a
so
lot.
That says about how he's regarded in league circles.
Yeah, they, you know, if you could
we
fix
work
him,
with
you,
this guy.
Yeah, if you could fix him, you've got a treasure on your hands.
Do you think they've made a decision about him already, one way or the other?
Wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, we tend to forget this. I tend to forget this. I don't know about you guys. I tend to forget this. The team has a whole lot more intel on players than we even imagine. I mean, let's think about this. They have a security staff on payroll that does nothing but do background and, you know, investigative work on these guys, what they do outside of the building. Maybe they have dirt on Jameis. Maybe they don't. Maybe they have good things on Jameis none of us know about. Maybe they have info, intel is the popular word. Maybe they have intel. Jameis's practice habits are so good, et cetera. You know, they may have information that would lead them to have already made a decision that we're not aware of.
I'm going to put Isbitz on the spot, which I love to do.
Make him squirm?
Lee and Steve, I'm going to ask you a hell of a question right now, so you better buckle up, my friend.
Yes, Ira.
Stop looking at your phone. Your wife ain't texting you. There's nothing going
on. He's not Mike Francesa.
Yeah, he's not Mike Francesa. Here's my question, Steve. And I think it's very pointed and to the point. If this organization had already decided that Winston wasn't coming back in 2019, wouldn't he be inactive right now?
Sure.
I think that's a good question.
No.
What do you mean, no?
Well, look, if they decide.
If they had already decided.
Well, look, let me say this. Everyone sort of glosses over the fact that ownership is allowed to gamble. These guys roll the dice all the time. And there's a ton of gray area. And sure, they may have decided he's gone. But, hey, you know what? Let's roll the dice. If he plays well, we might get something for him. We might change our minds. You know, we wouldn't want to keep our options open. The minute you deactivate him, you've shut down your options for the most part.
His chapter is done.
His chapter's over. So, like Lee said, we just really don't know either direction, positive or negative. I'll say this because it never gets talked about, and it's really important. Two things. One, we have no idea whether Jameis wants to come back here and continue his career. He's got a new agent who might tell him, look, the market out there is massive for you. All you have to do is say you don't want to be in Tampa anymore. And they will trade you, or you will get to move on. And the money is there. So we don't even know if Jameis wants to be here. He's been through a lot of baggage here, from benched to fans, to the initial, you know, all the stuff that swirled around Jameis.
Could Winston get a lucrative long-term contract right now? If this was March of 2019, right now, from any team, could he get
one? I don't think so. Not long-term.
No. But there's six games to play, and not long-term, no. But they wouldn't have to, and that's the thing, is because he's under contract next year for $21 million. And the one thing that nobody talks about, Ira, and it's out there, and other teams will care about it, and the Bucks may very well care about it as well, there's still an open civil suit for sexual assault in Arizona, and maybe the Bucks or whatever team it is, some teams won't want to be a part of.
Why? He's not going to prison. Not going to prison.
They may not want to be a part of all the circus that the plaintiff there and attorneys can start up.
And some wouldn't care, like a Jerry Jones. They didn't care.
Some wouldn't care, but some
will.
But all
three of us think that thing is going away and then it's going to be taken care of.
We don't know.
That's what usually happens.
Well, here's another thing that a lot of people don't like to talk about. And when I say this, there's going to be people, hey, don't blame me if your insurance premiums go up after saying this, because people are going to run. They're going to run over mailboxes when they hear this. If the Bucks wanted to keep Jameis after 2019, they have two options. He could be here through 2021. It's called franchise tag.
Very nice.
You know what? I'm sorry if you just hit somebody.
So now all of a sudden it's a year-to-year basis.
Yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, Steve and I mean, we wore out our keyboards saying Doug Martin, rather than sign him to a contract, you should franchise tag him, give him another prove-it year, and go from there. And they're, you can't, so expensive. Well, you know what? Had the Bucks franchised him, they would have saved a couple $1 million and waved goodbye after 1 year when he showed he wasn't reliable. Why can't you do that with Jameis? Like, prove it again.
The argument would be if you believe in him, you'd get a more feasible contract in 2019 than you would in 2022. It's going to go up.
You mean like a Blake Bortles type?
It's going to keep going up. The price for Winston's going to keep going
up. Sure.
That's if he performs well. That's it, you know.
No, sure, yeah.
So we just don't know, Ira. You know, and so much is going to come down to his performance, and then there's just market forces, right? The market just changed with Alex Smith breaking his leg. There's another team. You know, suppose Blake Bortles played well the last couple of weeks. They'd probably be looking at keeping him. Now he's gone, so you just don't know. I just hope Cutter stays till just about the end of the year, if not the end, and everything stays intact so Jameis can prove himself on some solid footing here. I don't know, Ira.
Steve, before we run out of time, I want to give you my locker room nugget.
Go ahead.
Got a little locker room nugget, Lee.
Jeff Ryan?
You know, I don't know. I don't spend all my time talking to the PR staff. I'm out there in the trenches. And I walk over to Marpet.
You took the word out of my mouth.
I usually do.
I was going to say Ali Marpet.
I love talking to Marpet. And I ask him about his people. And, you know, did you come out?
His people.
It's a tremendous clan.
He's some mobster,
and,
you know.
So I guess, you know, he had 40 people at the Giants game or whatever. Anyway.
Really?
I came up and I said, you know, and now Alex Kapp is looking at me, and Donovan Smith was gone. Well, he was playing that music today, by the way. Yeah, he had it going. So anyway, I go up to Marpet. And he gives me that, you know, the stink eye, you know, Sarah Sanders stink eye, and he goes, "What's up?" And I go, "Can you handle a little positivity, Mr. Marpet?" He goes, "Oh," and he looks at Kapp. He goes, He's putting me on. He's not going to say anything. So he goes, "What do you got?" And I go, "The run blocking was markedly better in the Meadowlands. Markedly better." Mm-hmm. He goes, "I can't believe you're giving us a compliment." And then I mentioned Peyton Barber. And I said he had a heck of a game. And without hesitation, Marpet said, "He ran his ass off." And I look at Kappa, and he's shaking his head. And Litke.
What's he shaking his head about?
He's probably shaking his head like, when am I getting in the
lineup? Yeah, when can I put a pair of pads on?
You know, Marpet said he ran his ass off. That means not only was the blocking good, mm-hmm. but he took advantage of it.
I'm going to throw something at you, Ira. I wrote about it.
And he's growing on Spielman, who does every damn Bucks game.
Yeah.
Not this week, my man. Not this week, Spielman.
Rondé.
We got Rondé Barber in the house.
Well, I got one for you, Ira, on that note. I wrote this yesterday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. The Bucks narrowly had that miraculous comeback in a game that Peyton Barber ran for over 100 yards. Peyton Barber's only run for 100 yards in one other game. Yes, it was a Bucks loss, but it was an overtime loss at Green Bay last year. With run blocking getting better, Barber has a heart of gold. We both know that. And with interceptions up, we don't care who the quarterback is. The interceptions are up. If you're Dirk Cutter, would you try to go ground and pound?
Something to be said for that, Lee. Something to be said for it.
Now, saying
part
it,
of it is stop falling behind by two touchdowns.
Yeah.
And that point right there, Ira, is very critical to what you were talking about for before. So intelligently about Jameis maybe losing a couple of notches of confidence, just a couple, because this team keeps starting slow. And Jameis's trademark has been, unfortunately, starting slow and then roaring back. But if you have a shred less confidence, all of a sudden that late comeback is harder and harder, and everyone's looking around, and here we go again. And I've written up quotes from Bucks players saying, you know, that here we go again stuff starts to creep in. JPP even said it, Alan Cross. It's been across the team. So we'll have to see there, Ira.
Lee, did you get anything out of Duffner?
The only thing I thought was interesting was he said speed doesn't necessarily mean you're a good defender. It's not reaction.
It's been a hallmark of the great Buck defenses.
It's true, but he said recognition. He says one thing to run, another thing to recognize. And I thought that was very interesting.
Maybe he means taking the right angles.
I was thinking reading the dang play properly. You know, it's one thing if you could run around, hey, I'm fast, but if you don't know what you're running at, well, it doesn't matter.
Glad that came up as well. I read a story on Joe Bucks Fan. I transcribed Dave Moore, who we all know, the longtime ex-Bucks tight end, 15 years in the league. He's on
usually circumspect in his remarks. Very tight to the vest.
Not circumcision.
Not circumcision. But you think that he made some very pointed remarks.
Well, this is what happened, Ira. He was on local radio, and he was asked about, come on, how is this defense not even just running into some takeaways? You know, nothing's coming at all. And Moore, in a very eloquent breakdown, explained that he sees a defense that's just reacting. It's not anticipating that essentially guys aren't comfortable in knowing what they're doing.
That's outstanding.
And when you don't know what he goes on to say, when you don't know what you're doing, then you're just trying to make a tackle. You're not trying to tackle and swarm and strip and punch, and you're not jumping routes, and you're not doing all these things that you do when you know what you're doing because you know what's happening. So
that's a heck of an analysis.
Well, Dave Moore pretty much said what Michael Lombardi, people don't know who Michael Lombardi is. He's
that's
a former
Vince's grandson.
No,
grandson.
Not Joe Lombardi is Vince's grandson, quarterback coach at New Orleans. Michael Lombardi is a former NFL suit. He learned the NFL at the footsteps of Bill Walsh.
And Al Davis.
And Bill Belichick. Okay. And his last podcast on The Ringer, he went on about a 5-minute rant about the Bucks. And one of the things he said was, they are so poorly coached. And that goes right what Dave Moore said. These guys don't know where they're going.
So, Ira, you know, and he...
You're talking about preparation.
Well, he finishes that up by saying that... one thing he also added was that the switch to Duffner could be a small factor, even though the Bucks were poor before that, just because if Duffner is making any changes at all, then that's more to think about.
And that's not Duffner's fault.
And that, no, of course not. If he's going to run status quo for Mike Smith, then that's not why they made the change. So it was really damning, and it's further damning to Dirk Cutter, who has said multiple times, I don't get involved with the defense, I don't veto anything, I don't mandate, I don't believe in it. So there's really no hope for the defense to get better if that's where they are. I mean, Kwan played with anticipation and passion and fire. Jordan Whitehead shows a lot of that. But here we are, and how does a defense not be able to have knowledge of what they're doing enough to anticipate 3 years essentially into the same system?
Tells me you're not well enough prepared.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been reading these books. There was a big Belichick book out. I read the whole thing. The theme that comes through 500 freaking pages of Belichick from all the players was how well prepared they were. You could even use that Malcolm Butler interception. They worked on it. They saw what Seattle likes to do on that goal line. He jumped it. He knew what they were doing with the pick play. If you don't know that, you can't do that. That's the theme that keeps coming. Now, look, there's only one Belichick. I understand that. The drop-off is substantial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy is the great coach of his time.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. But other teams seem to be more prepared, defenses in particular, for what the other team is going to do. And I think Dave Moore is onto something.
You just put a smile
on it. It's the scheme. It's the coaching as much or more than the talent.
You put a smile on my face, and I know I'm a woman the way I always reference this guy. But my old high school coach played for Lombardi, played for Landry, and played for a Bear Bryant disciple, Gene Stallings. His middle name should have been Preparation. That was huge with him. That was almost over execution, was Preparation. I'll never forget. I could hear him saying it right now. You know, we'd be practicing on defense, and I'd ask him something, or one of my teammates would ask him, well, Mr. Prout, what do you think about blah, 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 you know, quarterback? And he'd smile at us and shake his head. He'd go, you never know. Which meant you prepare for everything. Prepare for everything. And once you have everything prepared, everything will take care of itself.
You know, doesn't that pervade almost every occupation and every job, you know, description that you're going to do? Is you got to be prepared. If you go in and you're not very confident about what's the task,
you're
going to
make a mistake, yeah.
That's a problem, Steve. It's a big problem.
You're guessing and you're freelancing.
Is that why you're so good at this podcast, Ira? You just come in all prepared.
Well, I do. I do 60 to 90 minutes of preparation work, you know, for this podcast. By the way, I'm going on the Mad Dog later today. I put in a solid hour about what's going on in the league.
I know you do.
Because I don't want that guy to hit me with a question on live radio with 400,000 people or whatever listening. Maybe more.
I bet you there's millions listening.
Yeah, millions listening.
No, not millions.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, I bet you there
is. And I don't want to come off like a dummy.
Well, so, here's why I say millions. Howard Stern, who does get millions of people on that radio network, he said the second most important hire they've ever had, being serious, is Mad Dog Russo.
I wonder how many subscribers do you think they have?
Serious? Anybody can Google that, you know, and find out how many they make that
million?
All public.
Well, I'm going to quote you.
Serious? No, much more than that.
Much more than that.
What, 40 million is it?
I think it's in that neighborhood, yeah.
Wow.
I'm going to quote you.
It's pay site.
I'm going to quote you, Ira.
You're going to quote me to
I'm
me?
I'm quoting you on Mad Dog Russo. This is what you've told Mad Dog Russo many times in your appearances.
That I'm not Peter King. You can't push me around. That one.
That's a good one, but this is better. I come with juice, baby.
You're right.
Ira, going back to the Bucks, I think it's fair, taking Dave Moore's commentary, as well as everything that we've watched and witnessed. You know, Dave Moore is not the football god of America. But I think it's fair to speculate that maybe this cast of defensive players just are not very smart football players. We might have.
I don't want to go there, Steve.
I don't want to go there either, but it's
evidence is evidence.
It's reasonable to think that. Now, Brent Grimes, who's always been known as a high IQ guy, I think it's just a question of physicality
I
with
agree
him.
With you there.
He's lost a step. He knows it, whatever. But the other guys, who's this quote unquote smart player in this back seven?
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
know. I don't know. I think that's part of it, and that might further hurt Jason Light in some ways.
I'll tell you, you know. I hate to get DeKemper going, and this is going to get him going.
Uh-oh.
But it buttresses Lee's point that he's made about 41 times on these podcasts, and here goes number 42. Justin Evans is not developing, Lee. He's not developing.
He's okay.
He's okay. You know, is okay good enough?
No, it's not.
He made a beautiful pick against Pittsburgh, and I haven't noticed him since.
Yeah, he's invisible since.
By the way, the only pick that the Bucks have. The only one.
You know, a lot of fans do this, and I'm guilty as well. You know, I call it rear view mirror analysis. Man, Alvin Kamara over Justin Evans over Alvin Kamara, that set this franchise back 2 years minimum.
Well, a lot of other teams did it too, Lee.
Oh, sure. But I mean, granted, you're correct, but not every team needed the running back.
Right.
The Bucs were screaming. I mean, New Orleans had a Heisman Trophy winner at running back already. So you could argue they didn't need a running back as bad as Bucks.
No, nobody could have thought Kamara would be this good.
Yeah,
nobody.
There's so many running backs that they missed on it.
Last 2 years.
There's at least 10. at least. So, and throw that in the own internal staff of not playing Peyton Barber more last year and recognizing what they had with him.
There's a combination going on here. There's a combination of this organization doesn't know how to scout running backs. I think that's fairly evident. That's number one. Number two, Cutter, for whatever reason, was stubborn. Don't give me this crap about he wasn't a good blocker. Don't give me this crap about he didn't catch. Barber should have been out there. Barber should have been out there, not Martin. So for whatever reason, Cutter felt sorry for Martin and his off-field issues. Maybe that was part of it. I don't know, but it was a combination of this organization has clearly demonstrated in the past 5 years, they do not know how to develop, or not develop. They don't know how, they cannot recognize a running back talent, number one. Number two, Cutter stuck with Martin for whatever reason.
Steve, in all fairness, Martin's not playing badly for the Raiders. He's not playing badly.
No, it'll be interesting to see how he finishes out the year, but he's at least done well enough to be in the league next year. And you know what, Chuck, he's probably going to keep him. A veteran guy.
And he's starting to use him.
Love Doug Martin.
He'll probably draft a running back with the exit of
Lynch
to beast mode, and they'll have Doug Martin as the number two guy. All right, there's a football game on Sunday.
Yes, there is.
It is a
41-7.
The home team is favored, Mr. Isbitz.
The Bucks are the favorites against the lowly Niners, who have struggled and lost their quarterback.
All three of us picked the Giants last week, correct? All three
picked the Giants. The Buccaneers, you have to think they at least feel that they still have something to play for. You would hope. Jameis certainly has a lot to play for, and the lack of embarrassment would be one thing to play for. But
I went first last week. I'm going second.
You're
this
going
week.
Second.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right,
go ahead.
Despite the fact that DeSean Jackson will watch three of Jameis's passes sail right past him, even though if he could have made a little bit of adjustment, he might have had a prayer, the Buccaneers will beat the 49ers because of Jameis, the lowly 49ers, and the Bucs will win 33-21.
All right. I'm also going to pick the Bucs. Their defense plays markedly better at home.
Markedly?
Markedly. Eh. They're giving up 40 points on the road, and I think it might be 24-25 at home. The Niner offense isn't scary. Kittle's pretty good. The running back's okay. Quarterback's okay.
Yeah, Todd Monken's protege.
So I'm going to go with the Bucks, and I'm going to say, and it ain't going to be easy. It never is. 31-24 Bucks.
I think the scores really come down this week. If we had a sports book in Tampa, I'd go with the under, Ira. I think Cutter's going to keep trying to run the ball. That's going to be a big focus. And I think there will be a little bit of that limit risk for Jameis.
But you're going to pick the Niners.
No O.J. Howard, who's gone for the year. We didn't talk about that, but he's out with the ankle injury and the foot injury. And Cam Brate, whatever, is going to be featured, one of Jameis's favorite guys.
Right.
I think they'll keep it a little bit more simple for Jameis, and the Niners stink, and the defense, I agree with you, plays much better at home. We don't know why, but they do. So I'm going to go with the Bucks, though. I'll go 21-17 Bucks.
Nice.
Now, you see, there's no sports book in Florida. You mean to tell me Louie works out of the Chick-fil-A at Countryside Mall across the from?
He'll take your bet.
Yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, but will he pay? Will he pay when it comes?
Your credit's good, Steve.
So, all right, so we all got the Niners. No surprise.
Well,
we all got
the
Bucks.
Bucks.
Sorry, yeah, we all got the Bucks. Bucks. No surprise there.
Now, let me throw this out there.
All right, well, then let's go ahead. Throw it out.
This is one of the saddest parts of this 10-year descent into hell. because here we are going into Thanksgiving, and there's a significant part of Buck Nation, maybe not the people that come to the game, but Buck Nation in general, they don't want the Bucks to win this game.
Yeah.
And that is awful. That is awful. Shame on this franchise for letting it reach this point where a significant part of your fan base is talking about the draft and wants you to lose the freaking game. I'm tired of that. Aren't you, Steve?
Of course I am. You know what? In your honor, I'm going to put a poll, a Thanksgiving Day poll on JoeBucksFan.com.
What do you think before?
Maybe at night, asking fans, do you want the Bucks to win on Sunday against the Niners?
How's the Cutter confidence poll?
He's been doing so bad. It's atrocious. We're recording this before I post. I mean, it's going to be ugly. I'd almost want to spare the guy, but no, he's going to be over 90% no confidence this week, and which is hard to do.
Yeah, worse than Lovey.
Way worse than Lovey.
Way worse than Lovey?
Oh, way. Yeah, we talked about that. Way worse. I mean, look at the team. Come on.
Yesterday, I was watching NFL Live. I record that. And I wrote about this Thursday morning on JoeBuckSand.com. Ryan Clark said, there's no saving Dirk Cutter. He's gone. And in addition to that, he said about Jameis, not only must he start the rest of the season, you don't care if he throws four picks in a game. You keep him out there.
I agree with both things.
Well, as we head toward wrapping up, and thanks to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, their websites, you can find them on our website, as well as at EdMorseCadillacTampa.com and EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Dave Moore, Ira, in that same discussion, said he would not be surprised to see, if Jameis doesn't play well, to see Ryan Fitzpatrick back in there, or Ryan Griffin finally get his shot.
I'd go to Griffin before Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Now, I'd be surprised. I'd be surprised if ownership goes there. But you know what? I guess if Jameis somehow has two horrid games, maybe the decision comes from upstairs like, hey, we're not going to – enough's enough. We've seen enough. I don't know. But, gosh, I hope it doesn't get that bad, because that'll really get the paper bags out if Ryan Griffin's out there.
Ooh.
Here we are coming up to a holiday, and he's talking about paper bags, Lee.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Isfitt.
To Tampa.
Thank you for that beautiful, uplifting vision.
All right, Ira, give the folks a final uplifting word as they enjoy this holiday and holiday weekend and your sageness.
I'm hitting the road on Thanksgiving Day. I'm driving 3 hours because my brother-in-law is a gourmet cook, and he ain't got pizza waiting for me. He's got turkey with all the trimmings. I can't wait to dig into that cranberry sauce. And by 4 o'clock, when the damn Cowboys come on the air, I'll be cutting Z's on the couch. I'll be ready for a nap.
I thought you were going to say something different. Like, how shall I say it?
Flatulence.
You'll be cutting something else watching the Cowboys.
You see the way you guys think. Get out of here, Steve.